It's, you know, it's that Mention and Dispatches podcast thing that, you know, we do on occasion. And so we're into season 7, which is pretty cool. You know, it's not 7 years of Mention and Dispatches. It's, you know, been over 7 years of podcasting, but it's 7 seasons of Mention and Dispatches. We're starting our 3rd year of the podcast here. Joining me tonight, Mike Palello, Mike, BB Mike. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, Mike was with us last week. He's sort of become the semi-permanent, irregular kind of co-host type dude here. One Mike was not enough.
We needed Ed McMike.
Yeah. Ed McMike. There you go. We needed a 100% increase in Mike. So we also have with us Mike, OJ's dad, Mike. How are you, Mike?
I am wonderful tonight.
Channeling the Eric Clapton there. All right. Awesome. The woman about whom that song was written spawned no fewer than like 6 rock and roll hits between Wonderful Tonight and Layla and Why Does Love Have to Hurt So Bad? I mean, like, she was the inspiration for a whole bunch of great rock and roll hits. This is going to get confusing. So OJ's, you guys are going to get stuck being called by your screen names, because if I just say, hey, Mike, you're both going to start talking.
Mike, that's a problem.
Yeah, well. One of us has to go back and edit this together and deconflict everyone talking over each other. And it's not you guys. Just quickly, over the summer, OJ's dad, I know you've done a whole lot of our boy Cyrano's Saturday Night Fights games. Outside of Saturday Night Fights, how much of what kind of other gaming have you been doing over the summer?
Mostly computer stuff. Got into a big kick of Stellaris for quite a while there. I think that was probably the biggest one that I played. Just kind of dabbled in some other stuff. Got about 4 multiplayer Civ 6 games going on right now with different people. yourself is included in 1 or 2 of those.
I think I'm only in 1 with you. I'm in a couple of them, but I think I'm only in 1. It's funny that I think right now involving the Dragoons, we have 5 different Civ 6 multiplayer games going right now, which is kind of nutty if you think about it, that we've got that many of them with at least 2 Dragoons in them.
I will say this, though. That's the beauty of a play-by-email type system, right?
Yes.
A turn-based system is. We've all had this summer, right? People are on vacation, taking kids to college, whatever's going on, busy at work. And so you may have 2 or 3 days where some of those games don't have any progression, even a week or so, you know? So it at times it seems like you're busy. Right before we got on here, I had 2 turns and 2 different games going on, you know. And then there's other times that, you know, you can go days without a game progressing at all. But and that's fine.
Vance kind of torpedoed a couple of those games when he just took off to the cabin for a week.
Yeah, but, you know, that's fine.
The game was there waiting for you when you came back to it.
Exactly.
You are not in the big Stellaris live multiplayer game that's going right now, though, correct?
No, I am not. That's Vance and Martok and David Pumphouse.
Yeah, I think it's Dave. Yeah,
they've invited me in. It's just timing just never really works out. You know, they told me, hey, you want to jump in and play a little bit? Jump in and play a little bit. So I just haven't had a chance. Speaking of Stellaris, their big 3.1 LEM update drops tomorrow. So,
which means everybody's saved games are going to break.
Yeah, yeah.
So, BB Mike, we talked some about the gaming you've been doing last week, but what's been the big summer gaming for you besides the whole moving box Tetris thing that you've been playing?
You know, so non-computer wise, I have played with the wife some D&D Waterdeep. I think it's Dungeon of the Mad Mage or something like that.
Okay.
So we played that. We played through Gloomhaven and loved that. And I've got Frosthaven coming whenever that actually releases. So we thought we'd try that one. And I don't know. I don't like that game. I'm not a fan of D&D Lords of the Water. Actually, I may put that one up for grabs on the forums at some point, because it doesn't click with me. And the other thing we played was finally got Magic the Gathering to the table. And I've heard about Magic the Gathering for all these years, and we finally got to try it. So played a couple of games of that, and that was kind of interesting.
It's only been 25 years, man.
I know, and I'm just now trying it, you know? It's like, I don't know.
It's not really the new kid on the block.
It is not. Neither am I, so we go hand in hand. And then computer-wise, I'd have to say, and this happens periodically. I don't know why. I don't know what draws me back into it. But there's this computer game called 7 Days to Die. I'll just go through these periods where I'll just get so engrossed in that game, and then I'll give it up for a while. And they're getting ready to release a new Alpha 20, I think it is, where they're going to make all these changes again. Of course, they do this right as I start getting back into it, so all the saves will break like you were talking about Stellaris or whatever. So I've been playing 7 Days to Die. I've been playing a little bit of Humankind, even though it's not clicking with me as much as Civ 6 does. A little bit of Conquest of Elysium 5, which is a really fun game if you've never played it. And then I'm waiting for tomorrow for the... I've been wanting to get back into Stellaris because it's been a long time since I've played Stellaris. So you know, you're always waiting for that next patch to come in. So I think I'm going to give that one a try after the patch drops tomorrow.
Okay.
So, Mike, you mentioned 7 Days to Die. Have you ever played with anybody, or are you strictly doing that on your own?
I've been doing it on my own, but you know, at some point, I think I would like to try that one with maybe a group, like, you know, set up a person. Yeah. And I think we did that either here or at the other site where there was a, I think somebody set up a server and some guys were playing it. That may be something.
I've got it also, so maybe we'll have to see if we can gather up some people and do something. You know?
Yeah, I think that would be a very interesting game with multiple people playing. Yeah, I think so.
So, audience, as you're hearing the real-time organization of gaming going on here on the podcast, this is a great moment for the plug that we have a whole section of our forums dedicated to finding and organizing different kinds of games, whether it's live stuff online through TTS or whether it's the Civ 6 kind of stuff that Mike was talking about a second ago. This is great having you guys. I can just refer to that thing Mike was talking about, and it's it works. It's awesome. We've got folks putting together you know, any number of different on and offline kinds of games that we're trying to organize. And so if there's something like Stellaris catches your fancy, if there's a Civ 6 type of thing you've always wanted to try, or if you're nutty enough to jump into this 7 Days to Die, hop into the forums and, you know, just send up a flare, and you're going to find folks willing to play games for just about any kind of stuff you want there. So
yeah, it's not just computer games, it's board games too. I mean, Vassal, Tabletop Simulator, we cover it all.
And we are focused on war games for, you know, but 7 Days to Die, you know, obviously isn't a war game, but we sometimes get into, you know, people find some things and say, hey, let's go try this for a little bit, you know.
We have an avid crew of Magic the Gathering players on the site, so we clearly are not just war games.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we don't want the site to go off to the non-war gaming section, right? We want to, but we're not opposed to somebody saying, hey, I see some people here mentioning 7 Days to Die or whatever, and hey,
are the regiment of strategy gaming, right? That is our tagline. We are the regiment of strategy gaming, not just war games. We are the strategy gaming regiment. So we do have a little room to maneuver within that description. That said, we are still more war game than the war gamer.
We're a friendly bunch.
For the most part. Yeah, you catch us on the wrong day, we can be a little curmudgeonly, but that's just us sort of living up to being war gamers.
That is true.
Happy old men. Let's just be honest.
Yes. Fortunately, we've got command tent around to keep the mean age of the site down to something respectable.
Yeah, he brings it down from about 50 to maybe 49.
actually, and we have got some younger guys, Chronologists, Dave Pumphouse,
is
in that group. And, you know, these guys are like bragging about, you know, well, when did you guys graduate high school? And Jim and I are like, oh, you know, it was, you know, 80s there. Mid to late 80s, and they're like, oh, yeah, I was born about that time. And they're kind of getting smug, and it's like, well, you know, we could be your dads.
Yeah. These guys have high school graduation years that start with a 2. Yeah. Well, they. Chrono's sister is on the site too, right?
Yes. So, I haven't seen her around for a little bit, but yes, she is around. Yeah, she played around with us a couple times on Saturday Night Fights.
So we've got a couple of kids floating around. We've got a few more filtering in, and that's cool. Like, we're happy to share our love of strategy gaming with whoever it is that wants to come roll dice with us. As long as you're happy slinging dice and learning something new and not being a jerk, we are happy to have you. And even on occasion, if you are being a jerk, we can still be happy to have you. Just don't do it all the time. Before we, you know, shortly before we went on the air, OJ's dad, you were talking a little bit about a conversation you guys had on Saturday Night Fights that we were going to sort of revisit on the podcast tonight.
Yeah, we were talking a couple weeks ago. It was during the Osprey sales that were going on. And actually, we never really got into it too much because that was the night that the storms rolled through Milwaukee and Jim lost power. And so So we never got into it too much, but we're talking about games on sale. You know, who do you like to buy from? Local gaming store versus like an Amazon site versus the publisher directly. Just few of the folks there in the chat that were watching the YouTube, their opinions were obviously all over the place, right? There's a lot that goes into it, right? I don't know that there's any right answer or wrong answer. Obviously, if you have a good gaming store and you like the folks there and you want to support them, go for it. By all means, do it. You know, not all of us have that option.
Yeah.
I honestly tried to buy a couple things straight from Osprey during their sale. They have some kind of weird credit card security thing going on, and it would not accept my credit card. So, yeah, it is. But then I think it was Jim that pointed out, he just buys his straight from Amazon because he wants them in electronic form and just puts them right on his Kindle because he prefers them in that format.
Yeah, I can see folks doing that. I get wanting to have stuff on the Kindle like that for especially, you know, it takes up a lot less shelf space. I'm weird, though. Like, if I'm getting a book, I want the book. It's weird to say maybe I'm old fashioned when we're talking about comparing me to our boy Cyrano, who's got, you know, half a decade on me. BB Mike and I have talked before about how gargantuan our drive-through RPG libraries are, you know, to kind of an insane degree. And those are virtually all PDF things. But when Command Tent was talking about the Ironsworn RPG on the site one time, I took a look at it and I was noodling through the PDF and it looked really cool. And I wasn't going to sit there and just read the PDF nonstop. I actually ordered the hardcover book. Yeah, it was about, you know, $30 or whatever through DriveThruRPG. It's a very, very nice production. It is a gorgeous book. It is well put together. It's an incredibly well-written RPG, which just makes it that much more enjoyable to read. That was one of those ones that, as cool as reading the game on the PDF was, having the hardcover in your hand and reading it that way was that much more enjoyable for me. I'm a little weird that way.
And there's nothing wrong with that, right? It's what you prefer.
Yeah.
For me, and for me, traveling sometimes, I'd just like to be able to have that right there on a tablet and be able to read it on the plane easily. You know, have a whole collection of stuff with me.
As often as you're in the air anymore these days, that totally makes sense for you. I could absolutely see that. BB Mike, the last four or five things that you've bought, not digital games that would have been like a digital download through Steam or something like that, but the last four or five tangible things you got, where'd you get them? Were you mail ordering them? Was it a Kickstarter that got delivered? Was it a store you actually went to? Was it a buddy you bought something from? Where'd they come from?
Okay, so you have to be really careful here. And I really love Kickstarter and I love GMT and Compass both because, you know, GMT's got their P500, of course, and Compass has their pre-orders and Kickstarter's Kickstarter. And so a lot of stuff that I buy through any of those three, you know, you buy those things, you pledge or whatever you do, and they show up a year later. And so the great thing about that is they show up a year later and this box arrives and the wife goes, what is this? You're ordering more games? And you say, oh, well, dear, I ordered this a year ago. It's just now showing up. I don't, you know. And so.
Yeah. You know, when you said you have to be careful about this, I was almost going to interrupt you and said, why is your wife listening in? You
know? Exactly. So, hopefully she's not listening to this podcast because, you know, I can say, well, I bought this a year ago. You know, it's okay. So, you know, lately things that I have received through the mail, I think mostly Kickstarter, and I did receive the War of the Pacific and Europe from Compass. Those were, again, those were pre-orders from almost a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a while.
I've got two games from Compass that I pre-ordered at the very beginning of last year, and they still are not. I mean, they're in the process of working on them, obviously, but there's no actual release dates for either one of them yet.
Oh yeah. No! Yeah, see, no, I'm in the same situation. I've you know, Compass. There's probably still four or five things on their list that no delivery dates.
Yeah, and that's not a. I'm not beating up on Compass or anybody else. You know, it's just it is what it is. But to your point, right? If that shows up in 1st of January, I'm gonna be like, yeah, dear, this is something I bought literally two years ago. You know, I paid for it 2 years ago.
Here's the list. It's just 2019. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but those things happen, right? So, and obvious, we all know what happened last year, and things going on this year with logistical issues.
Well, you know, the show that I did with Gary about the global shipping issue right now, you know, the show that I did with Aardwolf on his Monday night stream talking about the global shipping crisis going on right now, I've got at least two Kickstarters out there that, again, as you guys mentioned, these things are, you know, 18 months old or more that should have been delivered last summer, that they're printed. They're sitting on a dock waiting for freight because the companies can't afford to move them right now. And even if they could afford to move them, they still got to wait for an actual boat to show up to put them on. I don't want to turn this into a whole discussion of, you know, sort of the woes of pre-orders and Kickstarters in the age of coronavirus. But you guys are right. That's a very valid concern for a lot of folks is I'm going to pay for it now. When will it finally get here?
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback on that comment because I just saw this last week that Los Angeles and Long Beach dock areas, there's over 50 ships waiting to offload. They have so many ships, they can't even get them into the anchorage. They're just sitting outside the harbors waiting, and there's more ships on the way. I'm not trying to go down that path, obviously, but it's not even getting better. It's getting worse.
Yeah, no, so, you're absolutely right. BB Mike, of the last, you know, four or five games that actually came in through the door that finally arrived, so you've got your two Compass ones, the War of Europe and the War in the Pacific. What else? And I'm assuming you said those were pre-orders from a while ago, so you got those direct from Compass, correct?
Correct, yeah.
All right, so what else did you have lately, and where did those things come from?
So, and kind of going back to the topic, so if I'm going to buy a new game that's out there, usually the order I'll check in is I'll go to the publisher first to see if they have it in stock, and I'll usually try to buy from the publisher. If not, it's either going to be Amazon, or I'll go to one of the smaller online shops. And my favorites for the smaller ones are, of course, Enterprise Games, who I'm going to, you know, give a shout out to yet again, because I love Enterprise Games. And the others like Rockin' B Games, I think. But Enterprise Games, let's go back to them for a second, because one of the games I got in recently was, and I probably shouldn't say this because I'm giving away Enterprise Games and everybody's going to start checking it and I'm going to lose out on this kind of stuff. I had wanted a copy of Unconditional Surrender, and of course it's sold out. And I just never found a copy. And I just happened to be on Enterprise Games website, and they've got, if you've never been there, they list new stock that's come in, and it's either, you know, new games or out of print stuff. And, you know, I kind of checked those, and they said they had three copies of Unconditional Surrender for like $80-$85, which is about what it was when it released. And so I ordered it, and, you know, it shows up within probably 3 days. It's a really fast shipping. They're great. If you've never ordered from Enterprise Games, go do it because they're great. So, I think the last things other than those Kickstarters or those pre-orders from Compass were Unconditional Surrender. What else? I ordered something from Hollenspiel.
Okay.
I think it was Empire at Sunrise. It was Empire at Sunrise because it's Japan in World War One.
Because it's a Pacific Theater game.
Well, sort of. It's World War One. Yeah, it's Pacific Theater, but it's a little earlier. So give me that at least. So that came in. And what else? I don't think there's anything else. There was the Lock and Load. I did order their Princeton, Battle of Princeton 1777 or something further came in.
Okay.
But see, again, that's directly from the publisher, you know, it's...
But that's, like, directly from the publisher is not, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting stuff directly from the publisher if that's where they have the thing that you want. Like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Some folks make it sound like, you know, going direct to the publisher is somehow screwing the local game store. Some people don't have a... OJ's dad, what's the commute to the nearest brick-and-mortar store that sells war games for you?
Yeah, I think there's one actually, a very small shop in Finley. I've been into it a couple of times, and it was almost all Euro games and Warhammer type stuff.
Yeah.
You know, nothing really was into what I was, but to get to more of the traditional war gaming would be Columbus, which is over an hour.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a haul for you. You know, for some people ordering direct from the publishers, the best they can do. Some folks are perfectly happy going straight to the publisher and, you know, giving them the extra bit of money that cuts out the distributors in the in-between. Again, there's no wrong answer. It's just what's your preference. I'm looking at what's stacked up over here that I've got. The last two things that I bought in store were both from Gamers Armory. Again, you know, going to pimp my local guys here, but both from Gamers Armory. I got the new Bruce Maxwell NATO, and I got MMP's Iron Curtain release when that came out back at the beginning of the summer. I try at least once every couple of months to buy something from my local game store at least once a quarter just to help support those guys. Usually a little more often if it's, you know, gift season or there happens to be something special in that I'm looking for, or have them pre-order something for me or hold something. I had them hold a copy of NATO for me, knowing that it was coming in. So those were the last two that I bought kind of in person, you know, walked in and pulled them off the shelf. I got my copy of Ironbound from DriveThruRPG, which was a little pricey, but I'm thrilled with it. I'm really impressed with the production on it. It is fabulously well done. Other than that, I probably just trying to think of the ones that I actually bought, because I probably got a couple of things that came in as review copies from some folks that I'd turned around and either was working on for the site or had sent out to folks. Those are probably the last couple ones that I got. A couple of different things on PDF through DriveThruRPG. OJ's dad, you mentioned the Osprey sale. I did look at some of the stuff in the Osprey sale, and I'll be honest, none of it, there was just none of it that really sort of lit any kind of fire under me to say, man, I got to have that. I was a little disheartened by that. I was hoping for more, and it just didn't come through.
That's exactly why I didn't buy anything from the GMT sale.
Yeah.
Last month or month and a half ago, just because I looked at the list, it had to be something that was in stock, and I'm just looking at what's in stock, and I'm just like, there's not really anything in here that I'm seeing that I really want to have that badly.
Yeah.
So
the other thing that I'd actually ordered from someone and got in hand in house here was, and I had the pictures in last month's unboxing, was I got those two sets of Kraken dice that came in that I'm holding for Christmas presents for people. But those 14 dice sets, the RPG sets from Kraken Dice, they're gorgeous. They're really sweet. They're very well done. Those aren't even for me. I just went ahead and ordered them while they were on sale so I could get them for, you know, get a jump on holiday stuff. That was it. And then I guess before that, the last other new something that came in was the copy of City Fight that I bought from Aardwolf. Yeah. So it's been a while.
I am getting ready to do an order here in a couple of weeks from NWS Wargaming Store. Pretty much I'm doing my wife's Christmas shopping for me and my birthday shopping. So they'll come and she will take possession of them. And if I'm lucky, she won't forget about them and I'll get them by the end of the year.
For those folks that don't know, Chris, the guy that runs NWS online, had multiple deaths in the family just recently. So as we are recording this, it's only been about 2 weeks or so. By the time we release this, it will be a little bit longer. But Chris has suffered a couple of back-to-back unexpected tragic deaths in the family. And so things are running a little slower from NWS at the moment. How long it'll take Chris to catch up, I'm not really sure. He's usually a pretty reliable, pretty quick guy with getting stuff out. As long as he's got it in stock, he gets them out pretty quick and usually has some great prices, and he's a nice guy to boot. For those of you wanting to possibly jump on some of the deals that they have, just be mindful right now that some things might be moving a little slower out of their warehouse just under the circumstances at the moment.
You know, we were talking about, you know, where do you buy things from and so forth, and I'll be honest, I haven't bought from him for quite a long time. I'm looking at a copy of Black Powder 2. Hardback edition, and it's $31 off of his site.
Yeah,
Amazon, it's $43, I think, the last time I looked. The difference is, though, Amazon, I can get free shipping. Chris is $12, so it's a wash, right? So yeah. To me, it's a no-brainer. The only reason I would consider buying it from Amazon is if A, I needed it shipped within a couple of days, or B, I had a bunch of gift cards and money like that I needed to use, you know, and I think that sometimes when people say, well, you bought that from Amazon. Well, a few weeks ago, I was at a customer site for 2 weeks, put in a lot of long hours, a lot of long days, and I was given some Amazon gift cards as a, that a boy, you did a great job. And, you know, people will sit there and criticize Amazon at times, but it's like, but it's free money, you know? And so you're going through this whole balancing thing, right? Of, you know, do I support the little guys? Do I use this free money I have for this? Do I use it for something else? So, you know, there's a lot of things to consider, you know, and I know some people have said, oh, they don't wait for sales. They'll pay full price for stuff. And that's great. I don't have a problem with that. But I also know that every time my wife goes shopping, whether she's going grocery shopping, clothes shopping, you know, whatever she's shopping for, she's always looking for sales, right? She's got the coupons in hand. She's looking for stuff to be on sale and get the best price that she can. And I guess to me, it's like, well, she's going to do that for for things that she does. I have some obligation to try to return that back also with things that I do. at times.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that when Distant World 2 drops that I'm not going to pay full price for it because I want it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's times, right? But you're trying to be select on some of that. And
yeah, there's definitely exceptions. If there's a certain game that's coming out that I'm probably going to pay full price, but it's rare. It's like you said, you really have to want the game, I think.
Yeah. And I think for younger gamers, it's harder too, right, Mike? You know, just young ones, maybe have younger kids at home, you know, they may not have the free cash to go out and
right.
pay full price for something.
Right.
You know, they may be willing to get a used game for half price, or they're looking yeah. for those seasonal sales.
Yeah. And like you said, some of the more expensive games, and I'm thinking, you know, I think I bought Absolute Victory, which was one of those high dollar games, but it's a case of where I had gift certificates, you know, from Christmas presents or birthday presents. Because I always ask for Amazon gift certificates because you can buy anything really. But yeah, it helps, you know, kind of capture some of that cost of the game that you're buying, I think.
Yeah.
Now, that said, I will also add that there are, and so I've been looking for used games a lot lately, and you're kind of screwed when it comes to pricing on some of the used games. And of course, my go-to sources for used stuff is usually either Noble Knight or eBay. And again, if you want a game bad enough, you're going to have to pay top dollar sometimes for those out of print games you can't find.
And I think that's kind of a big debate also, right? Yeah. I follow the Consim World marketplace there on Facebook. You know, and you see people grumble sometimes, like you're wanting people to pay more for a used game than what it sold for brand new.
Yeah.
You know, or you want people to pay premium prices for these used games, and you know, it's a real, you know, on one hand you can kind of understand what the people are saying about wanting those costs come down, but if they're able to sell it for top dollar, is that necessarily a bad thing?
So, you know, those people want the cost to come down, but if it's an out-of-print game, there's a limited number of copies, and the cost won't come down. because more and more rare, it's going to go up.
Yep.
Yeah, they tend not to go down very often.
No, there's no good old games for board games. I wish there were, but there's not. And sometimes you will get an older game, print and play, or, you know, PDF on Wargamer Vault, but is that really the same thing? No.
No, not generally, no.
As Armchair Dragoons continue the seventh season of Mentioned in Dispatches, we need to take a moment to thank those Patreon supporters who pledged at the regimental patron level. So a special thank you to Patrick Mullen, Hethwill Wargames, Steelgrave, Mike Quigley, Staggerwing, Robert, Joseph Knoll, Treb Curry, Kevin Bertram, and Patrick Garrity for their support of Armchair Dragoons and helping us bring you the best wargaming content on the web. You can join our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
So for used ones, you know, you mentioned Noble Knight, eBay, the Consim Marketplace. Occasionally, we've got folks mentioning stuff on our site. Don over at Enterprise carries a lot of used stuff. If you happen to be heading to Origins and you place an order with Don, he'll bring it to you at Origins. So that'll save you some shipping costs there. That's The other advantage to that is you can sneak that back into the house with the rest of the loot that came from Origins. No, I got these all at Origins. So it was
a prize from Brent. I had to take it.
Yeah, you could go with that. You know, if you think you can get away with that, sure. I will happily provide alibis in return for Amazon gift cards. Naturally. But there... The challenge that I've always run into with some of the used stuff is people seem to have varying impressions of what quality they think their game is in terms of how well they've taken care of it. If it's an unpunched copy, I'm a little more likely to pull the trigger than I am on a punched copy, just because I don't feel like having to go through the full counter manifest to make sure that what I got was completely intact. You've got to give me a really good deal for me to want to buy a punched copy of something.
Yeah, I'm like that too. You do have to be very careful. And I typically tend to look for, like you said, the ones that claim to be unpunched, unplayed. And it's never happened to me, but I've heard of people that have bought games that are, you know, on eBay or wherever, and they buy them used and they get them. And of course, someone has has attempted to clip the counters, and they look like little stop signs.
Yeah,
that has
come out as Octagon.
Yeah, and that hasn't happened to me yet. But if I were to buy a used game like that, and the counters came out looking like that, I would be very, very disappointed. I can say.
Yeah, that wouldn't do it for me either. I would definitely be disappointed with that. I will say, so if you're buying them used from one of the stores, from somewhere like a Noble Knight or Enterprise, you're generally getting a pretty fair grade on what it is that they're doing. And if they tell you that it's complete or that it's missing one something, you can rest assured that they've done an accurate count of whatever it is that's in there to make sure that what they're describing is the right thing. Those guys' professional reputations are staked on getting those things right. And I've never had any issue with getting something from either of them that wasn't exactly as described in terms of
I would agree with that. You know, Enterprise is I ordered a copy of, I think it was Victory Games Civil War a while back, and they didn't advertise it as unpunched, unplayed. It was just, you know, here's a used copy for, I think, maybe $35-$40. And when I got it, it was an unplayed, unpunched copy. And I was just like, wow.
Yeah, that's insanely good right
this
there.
This is nice. And Noble Knight's the same way. It's usually they're pretty good about letting you know what you're going to get. So
The only issue with Noble Knight is no matter what it is, it's going to be a good 15 to 20% more than you can probably find it somewhere else.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, they've got a huge selection, but you're paying for it.
They have and that's just it, right? You're paying for it. And sometimes you do that on Amazon. Amazon's not always the cheapest, but sometimes it's, gee, do I run all over the place looking for something, or do I go there and have it ordered in 3 minutes? And I mean, my wife and I did that a couple years ago with some decorations for my daughter's high school graduation. We went to two dedicated stores in Findlay, and we could not find what we were looking for. Before we got out of the second store, I had it up on Amazon, showed it to my wife. She says, yep, that's exactly what I wanted, and we had it 2 days later. So, you know, there's that whole factor there, right?
Some days, if you do the math on how much you're paying yourself per hour to find the better deal, you've just spent 2 hours to save $5. Is your life worth more than $2.50 an hour?
Well, I always use the thumb of what is my hourly rate at work?
Yeah.
Now, maybe that's not fair. Maybe that's not right. But that's what I use. Is if my employers are paying me this much an hour, then that's what my time's worth.
No, absolutely. I think that's a valid mathematical overlay to apply to that. In terms of the things that you've been ordering and the things that you've gotten in the door, just curious how much of it is absolutely definitely going to hit the table and going to get punched and played for sure. How much of it is stuff that you hope to get to the table, but you're still not 100% sure you're going to find an opponent? How much of it is stuff that you bought because you're interested in the topic and you kind of want to read and see how they treat the game, how they treat the subject matter, how they approach things, but you're not certain that you're ever necessarily going to play it and push counters around? BB Mike, what do you think?
For the most part, and I say the most part, the games that I order, they will eventually get to the table. There are a couple of exceptions, and one that comes to mind is Fields of Fire 2, which I've recently ordered. And, it's one of those games where everybody says, this is the best game since whatever the first game ever was, the best game was. And I've put off buying it for so long. Finally, I thought I'm going to buy it, and I bought it, and it's coming. And I'm just like, I don't know when I'm ever going to get to that. It's not something I'll eventually try it, because I think everything eventually is going to get to the table. Well, maybe not World in Flames, but everything is eventually going to get to the table at some point. So I would say that, everything I buy, I think you're going to see, well, I'm going to see on the table at some point. And a lot of these things will hopefully end up on my own worst enemy at some point.
Again, at some point.
Well, I do retire in a year, so this could be a whole lot more free time on my hands.
OJ's dad, should we hate him now or wait till later?
Well, I think our hatred of Vance for retiring this summer will have dissipated enough. We'll be able to renew it by then.
There you go. Fair enough. So OJ's dad, of what you've bought lately, what is definitely getting played, what might get played, what's probably not, but you still wanted to have a copy of it?
Well, and like I said, I really haven't bought anything table related recently. What I'm looking at getting for later this year is definitely going to get played. One of them is the rule book for Black Powder 2, which I've played a number of times with Jim.
Yep.
I'm looking at a couple of the other rule sets that we've played. Altar of Freedom comes to mind. Big Bloody Battles has been on my want list for quite a while. I'm looking at probably getting a copy of that toward the end of the year. So in some ways, I've already played some of these, right? And I've enjoyed them enough that now I'm going to go actually purchase the products and support the designers and the publishers.
Yeah, I will say there's one more I failed to mention, and I can't believe I forgot. This is a terrible, terrible move. And that is Horse and Musket 4, which released last week, I think it was. That's one that I, if I'm not mistaken, I just received a shipping notification for that. And so that's one of those games where as soon as it arrives, whatever's on the table is coming off. I'll do an unboxing video and then I'll go right into playing because that series is just must play for me. So there are some that definitely come in and just you have to get to them right away.
For forgetting that you had ordered Horse and Musket, we are not going to allow you to appear on the podcast with Amabel.
That's not nice.
Of course we're going to let you run the podcast with Amabel because I'm going to let the two of y'all do all the talking so I can just sit here and drink beer.
No, let's be honest. Brent can't sit there that long without his head exploding.
I'm willing to take that bet. You realize that whenever things go dead, like as the host, it's my job to nudge them along and to throw out the next question for you guys to discuss. That sort of where we're supposed to go with this.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a corral. He still has to corral us, yeah. It's
yeah. So the two most recent Hex Encounter games that I picked up at Gamers Army, Iron Curtain and the remake of NATO from Bruce Maxwell. I've been looking forward to NATO for a while. I'll be honest. I'm not sure if my copy's ever going to get punched or if I'm just going to end up primarily playing that online through like TTS or something. Vassal and I have never managed to click correctly, but I'm at least passingly familiar with TTS. I may end up getting a TTS game of that at some point, you know, dial up Mo and see if I can get a game with him at some point or something. I'm not sure that one's ever going to get punched, but I absolutely want to read it and study how Bruce has approached the subject matter, you know, 30, 35 years after his original design. I expect Iron Curtain is going to get punched and played a little more frequently it's a little more likely to get punched and played than NATO is going to. You know, they're especially those Cold War goes hot topics because that's the world I grew up in. And in some cases grew up kind of on the front lines of it being in Germany in the '80s. That's always a topic that's going to grab my attention. And I always like reading and understanding and seeing the approaches the designers took to those games, even if it's not necessarily something I'm likely to push counters around on. I've probably got a half a dozen magazine games along that front as well.
So you mentioned NATO from Compass Games. That's one of the three games that I'm looking at purchasing for myself for my wife to give me for Christmas/birthday.
Yep.
So definitely if you need somebody to play against, let me know. Unfortunately, I literally looked while you were talking. There is no TTS workshop mod for that right now. So maybe once I get my copy, I'll have to reach out to Compass and see if they'll let me do a mod for it.
I know Mo had been playing it online. I didn't know if he was doing Vasco or TTS.
I don't know how Compass is with tabletop. Yeah, and this is probably a topic for another podcast. It's interesting because you mentioned playing these things on TTS versus punching and playing and just keeping the copy aside. There are game companies that I don't think have embraced Tabletop Simulator. And Compass, I think, might be one of those companies. I remember Blitz World and Conflict. I had to design my own module for that. It's a lot of work, and I didn't dare post it on Tabletop or on Steam because, you know, these things are copyrighted, and you have to, of course, get the publisher's permission to do so. The same thing with Don't Tread on Me. I created this module. I think it's a nice module, but I couldn't post it, and people have asked me for it. So, you know, when you say you want to play some of these things on Tabletop Simulator, you're kind of limited into what you can do, I think.
So, yeah. Mike, I'll correct you right there because the third game that I'm looking at is from Compass Games also. It's Stellar Horizons. There is actually a TTS mod for that out there, and it's right there in the description that this has been released with permission from Compass Games. So I think one of those things is if you want to do something like this, can you get out to the publisher and get permission to release it?
Yeah, and I think that's where we're at. I think I doubt Compass did that themselves. I think someone probably created the module and then went to Compass and said, hey, I've got this. Can I post it? And they probably said, yeah. And I, you know, to be honest, when I did Don't Tread on Me, Ben Madison, the designer, said, hey, why don't you go back to White Dog and see if they'll allow you to post this on Tabletop Simulator, and I never did. Could be that I did that, and they maybe they'd let me do it. But I've never seen, I don't think I've ever seen a White Dog game on Tabletop Simulator Workshop.
And you're right, Mike. I don't believe this person would have had any working relationship. You know, I don't think they were compensated or anything for their Stellar Horizons. I think it's, you know, they did this, went back to Compass, and Compass said, yep, that's good. And let's be honest, right? Part of this is they want to make sure that there's enough stuff in there to make it playable, but not so much in there that somebody can basically not have to buy the game to play it, right?
Absolutely. You know, and when I did Don't Tread on Me, of course, the rules were not in there. It was strictly just the game and the components. And I wouldn't, you know, if White Dog wanted me to wanted that to me to put that out there, I wouldn't charge anybody for that. It's not a, you know, it's for the hobby. Right.
And I think sometimes some of those components, you know, because some of these publishers will put living rules out there on their websites, right, in PDF format. So maybe sometimes the publishers say, hey, don't put these charts on the game,
yeah,
in the module, yeah, right? Somebody has to have the physical game with those charts in it to be able to do this. And so some of that makes sense too, right? I think for some of them, it's just trying to figure out what do we allow in these mods to go out for free.
Yeah. Hey, GMT does that. They'll post the rules and the playbooks and all that stuff on
there. And Brant, we've talked about some of this before. I'm really surprised some of the publishers haven't embraced some of this and at least then just kind of gone back and said, look, we're going to charge people $10. You know, we're going to do it as more of a DLC than just a workshop mod, you know, or $5 or whatever.
The publisher's concern of how much of what do you let people see in advance? Because GMT gives you the rule books ahead of time. You can always go to their site for any of their games and pull down those living rule books. Saves them from having to mail out errata. They can just update the rule book, put a PDF out there, and you can always go grab it whenever you're ready for it. And that's a fantastic approach to good customer service. I 100% get why they do that and how that supports the model that they're trying to build for the community. The challenge there is that if you've also got the TTS mod from the workshop for a GMT game, I've now got the rules from GMT and I've got all the components, right? Air quotes around components that I need to be able to play this digitally. I just got a free game. And I get where, from an economic standpoint, that's not a great way to build a business. And GMT is trying to stay in business. And I say GMT, I'm using them as shorthand for anybody, any other war game company that's following that same model.
Well, that's where some of the publishers may say, hey, take out this, this, and this. That way we can make sure that somebody doesn't have everything that they need just to play it.
Yes.
At least not without working for it, right? I mean, obviously, somebody else could go out there and just have copies of it on that somebody can find somewhere in Reddit or this forum or that forum or wherever. And they can circumvent it, but at least they have to go work for it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I understand the economic anxiety on the part of some of those publishers. The flip side of it is I'm a Luddite. I want that new game smell. You know, I want, you know, counters on a map to push around a table. And to me, my approach to TTS is gonna be very different than somebody like Cyrano. OJ's dad, probably different from you now that you've been playing in Saturday Night Fights for, you know, 2 years or so, that it's not that that's not real gaming to me. That's just a very different kind of gaming. And that's not necessarily the kind of gaming that is at the top of my list. That is the gaming I'm willing to accept when the other stuff isn't available to me.
Yeah.
And I get that that's not that opinion is changing among our community. Like I fully accept and appreciate that. And on one hand, I'm very glad that it is, because I think there's room inside the tent for all kinds of gaming. It's just not my preferred method.
Well, I'm going to throw out two things with that. Almost all of Jim's gaming is miniatures based, right? So it's not the traditional counter that you're pushing around on hexes on the map. I think Command and Color is about is the biggest exception that I can think of. So there you got a lot different paradigm, right? Where if you did this on a table, you're having to go out there and buy a lot of these figures, right? And that could be quite an investment. So that's where TTS is maybe allowing people like that never looked at getting into something like that can open up the door for a lot of these publishers.
Right? I think that's where his gaming has evolved. But I think originally there was a lot more Hex Encounter than there is now with some of those old SPI quad classics. You guys got out Magic Realm from Avalon Hill one night. You know, I mean, there's
I didn't get into that, but yeah, I mean, there's an occasional Hex game, but I would say probably 90% of what he's done is not in Hex base.
It's certainly evolved far more toward the mini side of things than where it originally started. I will absolutely agree with that.
Yeah.
Jim's stuff is so unique, and he is so good at it that it stands by itself. It's in a category on its own. I mean, it's amazing what he does. You know, you can't duplicate that. A publisher couldn't say, "Let's put this game out in Tabletop Simulator, and it's going to be as good as what Jim does." That's not going to happen.
Now there's another side of that, though. If you take something like Starfire, the space game, you know, they have a Game Workshop mod out there that you can do your battles with and stuff. If you think of a game like that, it's probably a little bit more of a niche crowd, right? So you're less likely to find people local to you. So doing something like that there, you know, all of a sudden you got people from all across the country, all around, potentially all over the world, that now you can open up and play games with, right?
So this is the old Starfire you're talking about.
Yeah, well, and they have new rule sets now. I just bought it in February. After eyeing it for several years, they have a free basic intro space battle rule set that's maybe 7 pages long. But yeah, they have a full blown TTS workshop mod for it.
And I think that's right, though. I think that's, you know, that's the appeal of Jim stuff, is it's these people can come together from across the country with a common interest and play a game and enjoy it. Yeah, absolutely.
We've had a few gentlemen join us from Europe. Play with us on Saturday nights, and when we start playing, that's after midnight their time.
Yeah, it's always fun towards the end of the night when you know Giorgio chimes in, "Hey guys, the sun's coming up. I need to go."
Yeah.
Right. So OJ's dad, obviously it worked on you. That I am curious how many folks might have seen something on Saturday Night Fights and then gone out and bought a copy of whatever rule set it is that's out there. I would be curious, audience, if you're listening, chime in, let us know. Saturday night, Mike, ask that question of the audience when you guys are playing. You might have to ask it a couple of times because I know the audience cycles through at different points during the stream that you've got different people watching. Just ask, hey, has there been any Saturday Night Fights games where you guys have watched the game and went, "Wow, that's really cool. I need to go get a copy of that."
I think it was Snappy Nappy that we played, and the publisher, the author, the designer reached out to Jim and said, "Wow, we just saw a noticeable uptick in our sales after you guys did that game."
That's awesome.
So
I know personally, I bought a copy of Blucher based just on what Jim does. But
yeah,
I'm sure it happens. You know, A Billion Suns, that's another one. So
mm-hmm.
One of the challenges that you run into with the minis games, and this is something that Dave and Stennis has talked about in the past on some other podcasts or talk shows, they're not necessarily a unified set of rules. It's the base game from this with the supply rules from this, but we house ruled the morale to do this, and we're using these fire tables because we've got these particular artillery models that we think are really cool, and so we want to use them, but there weren't rules for them in the original game, so we had to modify that with something else. And so you've got this Frankenstein's monster of minis rule sets that you know probably make sense to the six people around the table, but to anybody else, like, wait a minute, what are you guys doing again? And I think that's less common on Saturday Night Fights. Jim tends to play the games pretty much straight out of the book, but it's a very common thing at conventions to hear the minis guys tell about it, and that makes it a lot more difficult as an on-ramp for a new player to try and figure out, okay, how can I get into this game? What do I need to go get in order to play the game I just sat around the table and played?
Yeah, and you're right, Jim. I can't think of a time that Jim's brought in any house rules. I'm not saying he hasn't. I just can't think of any time. I mean, you know, there's obviously optional rules in a lot of these rule sets that he's chosen to use or not use, but I can't think of any house rules.
there's been an accidental house rule or two where you guys misread the rule or misapplied the rule.
Yeah. I mean, that's just learning the game, right?
Yeah.
And as Jim admits, you know, in a month of gaming, when you're doing, when he's hosting sometimes three games a week, and every one of them is a different game rule set, you're going to miss some once in a while.
Yeah.
I think Ambush Alley, he just recently acquired that maybe, or he's had it and just hadn't got into it much because he's very much learning that rule set. So
yeah, there's another topic for another podcast, I think, is, you know, how do you go about when you get a game learning the rules? How long does it take you? What do you do to make that easier? How do you keep these rules separate in your head? I can tell you from the number of games and videos I do, it can be very difficult sometimes to keep all these rules straight.
to segue off that, Mike, do you think it detracts as part of that future podcast, right? Does it detract from the enjoyment of a game sometimes because you're muddling things up because you're getting rule sets confused? And I don't mean that, you know, I'm asking that as a legitimate question, right?
For me, it goes back to what Brent was saying, and that I just love the physical sitting down at a table and playing the game. And so if I get hung up on a rule, it's not a huge thing for me. And, you know, I don't know what they did back in the 70s and early 80s, but with Board Game Geek, usually if you have a problem with the rule, you can resolve it pretty
quickly. Yeah, and Jim has gone back, you know, after the fact and goes out to the publisher, designer, and said, hey, what about this rule? This doesn't make sense. The other thing that we have is people watching us live on the YouTube chats, they'll speak up and say, hey, this isn't quite right, or you missed this, or they'll ask questions and stuff. And I usually, I'm in a situation that I'm playing the game on my desktop computer. My laptop's right there in front of me. I can see both screens easily. So I'm following the YouTube chat, and I'll speak up and say, hey, Jim, somebody's pointing this out. Are we missing something here? And to Jim's credit, he never shies away from any of that. You know, if he's wrong, he'll say, yep, I'm wrong, you know, and we'll fix it as best we can. Sometimes he won't discover for a week that we made a mistake on a game that's taken two or three sessions to do. And he'll just say, well, we're just going to keep doing it the way we were because we just want to be consistent throughout type deal. So it can vary.
You know, if you're into a game and you're far enough into it, I certainly agree that perhaps if, you know, you discover you've been doing something wrong, at that point, you might as well continue doing it wrong. You know what I mean? Because it's kind of the rule for the game, the current game that you're playing. So
sometimes we fixed it, you know, and sometimes we haven't. It just kind of just depends on what the rule is and what we feel that the flow should be. You know, is it going to be real disruptive? Is it, okay, we started doing this and let's just keep doing it, or no, let's fix this now and going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it could be game breaking to fix it, or maybe not. Yeah.
So you come back a little bit to the where are you acquiring your games, in some cases buying them, in some cases your pre-orders or Kickstarters finally showing up. Obviously, the convention season kind of got gacked up this, you know, in 2020. 2021 hadn't been a whole lot better, although as we are recording this, Origins is still a few weeks out, and at least some of us are going to be there. How much did not having the conventions impact your game acquisition over the past 18 months or so? BB Mike, I know you've been one of our Origins regulars there all weekend for a couple of years now. How much did not having that exhibit hall kill whatever game buying you normally would have done?
Well, I mean, if I had been in Origins, and I won't be in it, it sucks. But if I were going to be at Origins, I guarantee you I would buy, you know, at least probably three or four games there, without a doubt. And probably two or three of those would come from Enterprise Games. It may be that when Origins actually gets underway, maybe just for old time's sake, I'll go to Enterprise and order a game or two just to stay in the game.
Yeah, exactly. OJ's dad, I know you show up at Origins every year. You're not usually there the whole weekend like the rest of us just because you got other family things going on around that time of year. But you're usually there and you're usually leaving with something. How much did not having the conventions this year put a crimp in your game buying?
Probably none, because I didn't usually go to Origins and buy a whole lot, maybe one or two games. So I guess throughout the year, I don't tend to buy a huge amount. So
just kind of.
Well, the thing about Origins is remember that you would get the little, if you were a GM, you'd get a little discount off of some of that stuff. So that kind of helped, you know, inspire purchases as well. And then if you're at Origins, it's not just board games you're going to buy. You're going to get some dice, even though you don't need them. You're going to have to walk out with dice. It's bound to happen.
Yeah, you can't help but leave with some dice. Last Origins we were at, I bought one of the bolt action pens. One of the ones for the guy that does the custom pens and custom mechanisms and carving and stuff. I bought one of the bolt action pens from him. They were just too damn cool. I had to get one. Yeah, of course, I got it in time for a global pandemic to rage where everyone went to pure electronic communication and nobody's writing a damn thing down at all. But I have a bolt action pen and it is cool. No.
Hold on to it. Maybe a collector's item someday.
Yeah, no kidding.
This, kids, is something that somebody actually used to write with.
One of the other things that I think not having the conventions did hurt was not just the game buying, but across the broader game acquisition space is we generally have some prizes we're giving out to folks. We generally have companies that are supporting our efforts by providing some prizes to the GMs for them to take a game or two home in exchange for working with us. BB Mike mentioned the discounts that we used to be able to do for GMs where we had some voucher credit that they could spend in the exhibit hall as though it was cash and Origins would honor those things for redemption after the show. They can't do those anymore. Apparently a change in the tax law or something or a more accurate reading of the tax law, perhaps. They can't do those same things as much anymore, but we still get fantastic prize support from the publishers that are there in order to help reward the GMs for the time and energy that they spend supporting the wargaming effort there. So the folks that tend to work with us tend to go home with a couple of things just as thank yous from the organizations we work with. And it's really cool that they're able to do that for folks. And then also folks that come play with us always end up leaving with a bunch of raffle prizes as well. Because, again, if we've got publishers supporting the efforts there, we want to get games in people's hands as much as we can. So that's always great. We'll see how it's going to work this year with it being, you know, a limited crew and limited events and limited attendance. And we're just hoping that we actually get to pull off a convention in person this year. And we'll consider that a success if we get that far. OJ, Dad, you mentioned, you know, you're doing your Christmas shopping for your wife for you. Outside of sort of you telling your wife, hey, love to get a couple of these things, is there much that shows up on the game front as gifts from someone, from family and friends? Or is it pretty much stuff that you go out and hunt and kill for yourself?
It's exclusively stuff I hunt and kill for myself. Yeah.
Yeah. BB Mike, other people, you know, contribute to your delinquency, or is it all your own fault?
No, it's all my own fault. The only time I ever received a gift from a family member was back in 1979, 1980. it was Starfleet Battles. And
it's been downhill.
That's kind of what set me on this road of wargaming and board gaming. But yeah, no, it's strictly me at this point. I mean, if I want something, I'll ask for an Amazon gift certificate or something like that. But no, it's just me.
Unfortunately, I think that's where part of the problem too comes, right? Mike, is your wife's probably not familiar with who Enterprise Games is, as
right.
an example. You know, or who Noble Knight is. And granted, I know Noble Knight has the want list, right? I don't know if Enterprise has anything like that. I'm guessing they do. But that requires our logins and so forth. It's not easy for them. And if you don't have a local store that you're familiar with, that you can give a list to your wife or your spouse, or your significant other, and say, here, and you can go to this store and they can help you get it taken care of. It's hard for people to do things like this sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then to know what you would be interested in, and you just wouldn't work out. It's
in my case,
like, you know, it's when I, you know, kind of like when you were young and you would tell your parents, you know, I want this really cool whatever widget. And of course, Christmas would come along, you'd open up your present and it's like the knockoff version of whatever you wanted. And your parents are like, oh, look, I found what you wanted, but this was cheaper. It's the same thing, but it's cheaper.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's not what I wanted at all. So it'd probably be the same sort of thing. Or if I told my wife I wanted a board game to go out and surprise me, I'd probably get something with meeples in it. And I'd be like, oh, okay, you know,
No. Not that there's anything wrong with meeples, but
of course not.
The advantage that I do have is with having Gamers Armory right here. My wife knows that push comes to shove, she can go over to Gamers Armory, get a gift certificate, and call it good enough. And so I've received a few like that as birthday presents over the years, either Gamers Armory or one of the other local game stores around here, although I don't think any of the others that I'd gotten gift certificates for in the past are still open. But Gamers Armory gift certificates, always a safe bet for within our family. You guys have mentioned the Amazon gift cards. There's been more than a few Amazon gift cards that have turned into game, you know, games or game accessories over the years. The game stuff that I've gotten has tended to not be war game stuff. It's tended to be broader strategy game stuff that we've been able to play with the family. Seven Wonders Duel was a gift. There's been a Ticket to Ride game or two over the years under the Christmas tree. One year I got the Runebound Isle of Dread expansion to the original base Runebound game. That's always. Yeah.
And in fact, I'll take it one step further. My wife has sometimes, you know, I'll be standing there looking at my collection of board games, and she'll walk in and look at it and go, you know, if you were to like get killed within, you know, tomorrow, what would I do with all this stuff? So, and there's been a discussion around that too, is, you know, what would I do? And I said, well, you know, and I thought about it at one point. I told her, well, you know, contact Noble Knight. I'm sure they'll take
it. I can send you my mailing address. You can
it dawned on me that if she sends this stuff to Noble Knight and she sells it to him, she's just going to get store credit there. So that's a huge waste, right?
At that point, call Don, because Don will end up, you know, cutting a check to your wife and you'll be fine. So
there you go. I leave everything to Don.
I would prefer you not jump in front of a bus before the end of the season. We've still got a bunch of episodes we got to record.
There you go. And I got a bunch of games I got to get to the table too. So
there's that. You still got to finish your unboxing for Thursday.
Oh, it's done. It's actually, I uploaded that today.
OJ's dad, you got any unboxings for us for Unboxing Day this month?
No, I do not. I do not.
As we're saying this, like, Unboxing Day was a couple of days ago, you know?
Yeah. real quick on the whole gift card thing, I was just looking. Noble Knight does have gift cards.
Interesting.
Just whoop, just throwing that out there that you know, that is, again, you know, something that would be easy for you to throw up there, that would be easy for a spouse to go acquire for you. It's a It's a digital gift card, is what it is. So
I've never looked, but I wonder if GMT and Coppice and other publishers have gift cards. I don't really.
GMT does, because a couple of years ago, one of the Now Dragoons had gifted me one, which was very nice of him to do, and I'd completely forgotten about it until I was looking for something else in my email. I was like, oh crap, I've still got this, and it turned into, you know, a couple of games from GMT. So.
I don't see anything on Compass. Obviously, though, you know, you got to make sure that you communicate with who's getting the gift for you, right? You obviously don't want a gift card from GMT if you have nothing on your radar that you want to purchase anytime soon. And that's not a slam on GMT, right? I mean, anybody yeah. that's doing this, if again, you're thinking, hey, do I have anything on my radar that I might want to pick up from Noble Knights, then you might want to say, hey, don't give me a gift card from there.
And that's where everybody always, because it's easier for them, they default back to the Amazon gift card for you.
Yeah.
and to be fair, though, Amazon doesn't always have a great selection of what we're looking for.
No. Oh, no. And if they do, especially if it's something used, it's astronomical. And like I said, I was looking at Unconditional Surrender on Amazon. It was like $200 for a copy of that, you know, and so... Yeah, they can get crazy sometimes with their prices.
Yeah, where Amazon does work out well, and BB Mike, this probably applies to you a little more than OJ's dad, just because you're a little more of an RPG dude than he is. But the role-playing, not just the role-playing products, but the role-playing accessories, the dice trays, the minis, the map pieces, the accessory dice for character generation or for villages, or the little dial cards for character stats for tracking like hit points and conditions and stuff. There's a ton of great RPG accessory stuff that is available at really good prices through Amazon and a couple of different places. And I don't feel bad about pointing people to Amazon for some of these things, because I'm not sure you can even buy direct from manufacturers for a lot of those things. If you just have a small dice collection and want to have a large dice collection in a hurry, one way to do that is to order one of those big mixed bags off of Amazon, and you get a whole lot of stuff in a hurry that you can now have your whole family around the table and each their own set of dice for your first RPG adventures.
Get back to your conversation that you had with Ardorf a few weeks ago about supply chains and so forth, right? And one of your big points was it's hard to make these games 100% in the U.S. because a lot of the pieces that are needed aren't produced anywhere in the United States, right?
Yep.
So maybe Amazon is a great place. I don't know where else you would go to start looking for maybe some of those pieces and parts. Amazon would be the first place that I would maybe go look for something like, for some of those things. I don't know. Now, I will just throw this out because I just saw this on Avalanche Press is they actually sell cardboard so that if you did a print and print it your own counters, you could put those right there on that cardboard.
Yep.
So,
well, do you mean they're blank counter sheets? Or are they?
No, they're not sheets. They're just the cardboard. It's a cardstock.
Like chipboard?
Chipboard. Yes, thank you. Okay. Yep, yeah. Chipboard course is and it's like $10 for 10 sheets.
Yeah, depending on what you're doing. Great little secret here from having worked at Ginkgo's many years ago. They use the chipboard as padding in the big mechanical cutters when they're cutting business cards or they're cutting flyers or something for people. So if you go in and you just ask, hey, can I get 2-3 sheets of chipboard from you? That more often than not, they're willing to just hand them to you because they get them by the case. And if you just need 2 or 3 sheets, they are more than willing to just hand you 2 or 3 sheets of chipboard. No problem at all. If you go in and you ask for like a ream of chipboard, they'll probably find a way to charge you $5 for it or whatever. But if you just need some just for mocking up some playtest counters or you've got a free download print and play something that you pulled off of Board Game Geek, you can get chipboard from somewhere like I keep calling them Kinko's, right? They've been FedEx Office for almost 20 years now. But you can walk into most of the copy shops and be able to get a 2-3 pieces of chipboard for free from those guys. Just ask nicely. Guys, we are running an hour and change into our recording time here. So obviously, once we edit out me saying as often as I do, that'll come down a little bit. But I do appreciate y'all joining us on an off night here because we had to move the podcast recording to a slightly different than normal night, which is fine. It's fine. The audience isn't going to care. They're going to listen to it whenever they listen to it. But I do appreciate y'all joining us. So OJ's dad, what's the next thing that you are playing in any form or fashion? What's the next game that you're about to poke around at?
Civ 6. One of our multiplayer games, I'm sure.
You're up.
Yep.
Yeah. BB Mike, what's the next thing you're going to poke at here?
So I just wrapped up a game of Hold the Line, the American Civil War. That'll be going live Wednesday, so that'll be out before this podcast is out. The very next thing I'm hoping to get to the table is, like I mentioned earlier, is Horse and Musket 4. I'm hoping that comes in this week. So that's my hope. That's my wish.
Good. The very next thing I think I'm poking at, I am in the same boat as OJ's dad. I think I'm probably up in at least one of the Civ 6 games that I'm in. So I have a feeling before I do anything else, that's probably the next one up. But I do, I had reset my Rommel at Gazala game, and I'm trying a slightly different setup with Lock and Load Publishings. If you're following the Armchair Dragoons Twitter feed, you'll see where I posted the picture of that earlier today. I changed the setup, and I'm trying a slightly different strategy as the Germans this time, see what happens. But I suspect the Civ 6 game will probably get poked at before I start pushing counters around on this thing.
Yeah, so. You are up in at least the game that we're in together.
Okay.
Hint, hint. Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't count on it tonight. It's late. But tomorrow, sure.
Dude, so, it's not even 10:30.
Yeah.
You're not even 50 yet. Come on.
Yes, but I'm also generally up about 5:30 in the morning so I can get a walk in before I gotta get my daughter out to carpool over at the middle school.
Yeah, so am I. Yeah. Just because I'm an old man with ADHD and can't sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. I like my sleep and I like canoodling on the couch with my wife. So I'm gonna go do those things instead of worrying about the sick and y'all can open. On that note, thank you gents both for joining us. And thank you, audience, for joining us as season 7 rolls on. Again, coming up down the way, we're going to have a couple of the professionals come back and talk about the professional wargaming world. We are going to have Amabel pop in and talk about Horse and Musket at some point, probably after Origins.
And I'm available for that podcast, by the way.
I'm sure we'll try to do sometime when you're not of it. No, I'm kidding. I have no doubt in my mind OJ's dad will be back when we have the Compass catalog get released. And we have fun with the Compass catalog and then get hate mail again afterwards. So there's a lot to look forward to here with season 7, and we appreciate the audience coming along for the ride with us as well. Guys, thanks. It's been a lot of fun, and we'll do it again soon.